to the Columbia Center for Spiritual Living, a welcoming and diverse community whose vision it is to contribute to a world that works for everyone. The inspirational message you are about to hear will expand your idea of what is possible in life right now and affirm your soul's knowing in taking that right next step towards your greatest good.
I am so grateful to be with you today. To be able to take a deeper look at this question, who am I serving? As we dive into our new theme, Building a Consciousness of Sacred Service. My journey has been about getting clear on who and whose I am and who I am serving. I have learned to ask myself, does the act of service I am involved in now or might be contemplating to put up my hand for come from a realization that the highest and best for all is happening right now? Do I think that I can bring something to someone or a situation that otherwise would not be available to them? Or do I ask, is this mine to do now? And you know, I found my clarity around these two questions, which took me a long time to figure out what those questions were, will form a conscious intention for me in sacred service. So my message today is about being in sacred service as a spiritual practice. Sacred service is being defined closely with the Sanskrit word seva, which describes the act of selfless service, purposed to the collective benefit, without personal attachment or gain in the outcome. You know, for me, I desire, to give fully of myself when I give, and I must remember to prioritize the taking care of myself to ensure that my cup is always full. And to this end, I get to feel a sense of freedom and joy in contributing to a world where we all can learn to be love, love, and be loved more spaciously and graciously. I'm reminded of a quote from Carl Jung, who said that to be able to give something, one has to be something. One must consist of gold and not of hunger. And this is where the idea of building a consciousness of sacred service comes from for me, as all begins in mind first, and why sacred service can become a most useful spiritual practice towards consisting of gold and not hunger. Now, I'm defining spiritual practice. I'm sure you've all got your own definitions, but for me, it's a regular engagement or performance of varied actions and activities that I undertake for the purpose of realizing a direct experience of the infinite spirit or God that dwells within me. The intention of my practice is so that I may remember and feel centered in and certain of my true nature and feel my oneness with the nature of all being. Now, I spent a lot of brain juice contemplating this idea this morning. Who am I serving? How to give selflessly and care for myself so that I may know how to be love and live unconditionally my chosen life of service? How to find the most salient points to share relevant to this question, excuse me, that I hear many ask, especially at turbulent times in our humanity's history. And that question is, how can I best serve and make a difference? And you know, it is such a varied and personal answer, as it is a matter of the heart that can often get hijacked by the mind. But you know, what I know is that consciousness demonstrates, and consciousness is all there is, the beginning of everything. And from this point, I can clearly state with confidence that our intention, whether conscious or unconscious, behind our acts of service, will place it somewhere on the scale towards sacred, selfless service. If we're to create a world that works for everyone, we need to take action in the direction of practicing kindness, compassion, and just simple-hearted generosity. Our founder, Dr. Ernest Holmes, says, "Treat and move your feet," which reminds us not to stop at the level of contemplation or even setting the intention, but to actually put boots on the ground in alignment with the energy of the outcome that we are desiring to create. Remember that action can take so many forms. Some say that prayer, contemplation, and doing other forms of spiritual practice is not taking action. However, I would say to you that anything that shifts and expands our perception about what is possible by means of us or another contributes to movement in consciousness. I believe that our acts of service, whether giving our gifts of time, talent, or treasures, are well-intended, always carrying with them a good measure of loving kindness. You know, being a volunteer is a beautiful service out in the world that brings too much, or rather so much, to so many. And I think I would include in that muchness a sense of hope, inspiration, and motivation, trust, hopefully inclusion, and a sense of worthiness. Martin Luther King Jr. said that everybody can be great because anybody can serve. You don't have to have a college degree to serve. You don't have to make your subject and verb agree to serve. You only need a heart full of grace, a soul generated by love. I once read that service is love put into action. Yet if we ourselves are love, and love put into action is service, then anytime we're in action, we're in service. Author James Blanchard Cicero says this, "Service, as defined by the ego, has boundaries and parameters that the ego's world decided fit or don't fit in its definition of service. The ego says we're being of service if we do A and B, but not if we do C and D. It tells us that those who are doing A and B have bigger hearts and are better people than those who do C and D. The ego tries to have us believe all this to further separate us from our brothers and sisters. It's a good thing to remember. One would think that an act of giving to another might close the gap of the haves and have-nots, build more intentional communities, and support others in aspiring towards their best life. And while this may be true, have you noticed that not always do you walk away from having given, feeling joyful and energized, and or not always do those kinds of feelings last beyond a short sense of gratification? Now, I've looked at this, and I think perhaps it's because we draw our fulfillment, and in some cases, our personal value, more in relationships with others than from the sacred communion with the divine. This will obviously put us in the position of having more of a me agenda in service and the expectations of others to match. Indeed, there's many obstacles in choosing sacred service as a spiritual practice. And one near the top of the list in my mind is poised to find love outside of myself. Another great challenge to finding peace in the midst of conflict is the demand to look beyond the immediate situation. You know, when hatred, rejection, or opposition are high, the credibility of peace and joy in our service is at its lowest. And here is where the need to develop generosity comes into play, tapping into the generosity in our hearts to see with compassion increases our ability to see what is not readily there when we are in service. So I'm going to ask you just for a moment, think of a challenging situation in your life, perhaps in a recent experience of being in service, one that you have reviewed, telling yourself, you got to rise above this to find a solution. And in this moment, ask yourself this. If I was exceedingly generous, how would I behave in this situation right now? Are you able to look beyond the situation to find another opportunity to help and care? Are you able to lift yourself out of disappointment or judgment to afford the gift that you are to light someone else's world? In any given situation of service that provides challenging feelings, I think the way to move it from discord to peace is through remembering that it matters not who takes the first step. I know that's a hard one, right? It matters not how it starts, but that the results desired are reached. And I believe that we all want that same desire. Connection, understanding, peace, love. And that if we bear a generous attitude in these types of situations, we take the first step in building trust, which without peace is impossible. Here's an illustrative story of this. The former president of World Vision, Dr. Stan Mooneyham, was a facilitator of the Latin American Church Leaders Conference. This is quite a few years ago. It was an assemblage of leaders from every persuasion, and the first day was filled with lots of arguments and disagreements. Dr. Mooneyham wished that someone else had that role of facilitator. He thought about this all night, didn't sleep, and you know, the next day he went to the flip chart and he put a series of isolated dots on a fresh sheet of paper and drew a small circle around each one of them, explaining that he had felt each person had drawn a little circle around himself for protection. Then he drew a large circle that circumscribes the entire page and quoted from Edwin Markham's famous poem. He drew a circle that shut me out, heretic, rebel, a thing to flout, but love and I had the wit to win. He drew a circle that took him in. And then he commented to those present, I may not be in your circle, but you are in mine. And there's nothing you can do to get out. You can't resign, walk out, or run away. If you try, I will just draw a bigger circle. Now, I don't know about you, but I'm not always a very accurate circle drawer. They're wobbly and they often don't join at both ends. I used to use a form to make my circles perfect, but now I let them be perfect in the way they are drawn because my intention is for the good of all. And that kind of generosity in challenging situations where I feel vulnerable is absolutely without a doubt the nature of God flowing through me. I could not see it right without surrendering to the sacred place of the Most High within me. And the only way I know to heaven in these situations is through the house of my enemy. And I hold that my ego's definition of who I am projects outwards in all matters at hand and in all situations that matter is limiting at best, and always brings forth that negative, repetitive chatter. And that is the house of my enemy that I must open to, embrace, and move through to this beautiful heaven, to the sacred place of the Most High, where two or more are gathered. I want to share a personal story with you that speaks to the crux of healing my small mind, our small mind, our enemy, and giving thanks to the infinite creative mind of God, our constant supporter of our good. turning our conditions of judgment and anxiety that can occur in volunteering our time, talents, and treasures into a harmonious experience and value for all. I remember this day several years ago when a dear friend and colleague of mine, and I will put her name into this circle, Reverend Trish, shared with me that her cancer had returned, and although she hoped for the best, she admitted feeling very, very scared. After listening to her over a long lunch, she asked me, "Well, what great wisdom have you got to share with me?" I felt in the face of her present depth of feeling and the gravity of her situation as she expressed it that I had nothing to contribute. You know, I wanted to draw upon the clarity of our teaching, you know, which we had shared many times in class, which tells us to turn away from the condition and not give it power and say something like, "Turn away from that within you that is of dis-ease. That which lacks the natural harmony of perfect life has no power of its own." You know, it's a condition, and all conditions change. Turn instead your attention inward, you know, to that within you that knows it knows, and sense of a feeling, and think into a much bigger picture. One that gives your energy into affirming the perfect substance of the eternal, living, moving, and having its being as you. But I didn't. I just instead simply took her hand in mine. And in silence, the presence of love became its own answer. And I think that story is very poignant. Because to be in sacred service, there is an element of selflessness. And for me in that story, when I was able to look outside of myself and what I thought I could bring, what I knew, even what I was known for, when I was able to look outside myself, my need, my desire to support my friend by saying the right and perfect words that would bring her instant peace, I was able to look into her pain. Even though I intellectually could not relate, I allowed the generosity of the spirit within my heart to guide me. Her needs and wants in those moments of our conversation became a reflection of the wants and desires that rest deep in the emotional and spiritual life of every person to love and be loved. When we allow ourselves to step aside of our needs, our pride, and the vulnerability of our personality and surrender to the presence, the smallest action will then take on great significance, and we will remember who we are serving. Indeed, each of us benefits greatly from the love and support of others, but do we give that same care and consideration to ourselves? Volunteering can reveal places where we are replacing self-care with other care. Our early lessons and society's values leave us with unmet, often hidden needs and desires, especially those for love, passion, and authenticity. Most of us are taught from childhood that we are supposed to be generous, to give to others, to meet the needs of people around us. Jung's insistence that we eat the gold in the world and accumulate abundance differs from our early teachings and runs against society's sets of demands for feeling successful and worthwhile. You know, this runs along the same lines as deny yourself. That's referring to your ego, however, not your aliveness. Deny yourself. This is important. It was for me, so I'm assuming it will be for you. Forgive me for the assumption that denying yourself, that idea, is referring to our ego, not our aliveness, our spirit. Our aliveness is sacred, and we must protect it like a mother bear protects her cubs. If you put your partner or the stability of your relationship ahead of your aliveness, you probably will end up on a road most traveled. I think the best gift you can give your partner, your friends, your career, your gift and service is a self that is in love with life. And that usually means being sacredly selfish about three areas of life. The first is our inner voice. You know, one thing I've always loved about Jesus was how he modeled this. Most of us see Jesus as a very unselfish being, but if you try to distract him from following his inner voice, look out. On one occasion, Peter tried to do that, and Jesus called him Satan. You know, before you listen to or get distracted by any other's voices in your life, hear yours and give it priority. The second area I've found to be is our creative path. Each of us has come into this world to make a contribution. You know, we're here to express ourselves and offer our gifts. That's what I mean by our creative path. That may mean being anything from raising children or starting a business or being president. You know, our aliveness is intimately connected to how fully we live our creative path, and we must heed the call, however many times it might change. And I think the last of our areas of activities. Engaging in activities that make us feel vibrant and alive, for me, is the last component of sacred selfishness. Simply put, we have the right to do things that make us feel happy and joyful. Our role in life is not to help everyone else enjoy life, but to model joyous living for them. I learned that most profoundly in my last 11 years living with my mother and caring for her before she passed on. I would wake up every morning. I would beat my head against the wall. I would ask other people for advice. I would check out the internet. How can I make her happy? She's so miserable. And then I realized it ain't my job. So I had to define what being a good daughter was, and often over and over again. And I'm going to say something a little controversial here. You know, the idea of spending quality time with your children, your mother, partner, needs rethinking if it means you must cut out activities that rejuvenate and enliven you. So may we learn to give because we want to, because we are called to, because another's actions inspire us in that moment, because we see God in action, or just because. And as we build our consciousness of sacred service through spiritual practice, that deep, abiding, intimate recognition of the presence within us as source, we will release any gift given from a sense of obligation, a feeling of guilt, a need for atonement, or a feeling of unworthiness. Here are a few things I have observed about myself as a giver along the way. I used to give to get, I was attached to the outcome. And you know, now I understand and take great joy in simply the practice of giving without looking for any return from the person, the organization, or, and hear this one, even the universe. I don't even look for a return from the universe, even though as I think and I act and I feel, I imprint the universal law of mind, which cannot help but impersonally and affirmatively return to me the energy of that which I have put into it. I don't look for that. I thought that being a generous, open-hearted person was also a way into others' hearts, into circles of influence, even a justifiable reason to escape obsessing over what wasn't working in my own life, or what I didn't have, or even to make amends for times of the past. And you know, I have learned that giving from my heart irrespective to my life condition, simply builds trust in my value as a human being without the messiness of codependence. I have learned that my job is to be responsible for myself, my thoughts and actions, taking great care in sustaining myself first so that I have the physical, mental, and emotional resources with which to share spontaneously wherever I am guided to do so. And the golden oldie, last but not least, I have learned to open up to be a gracious receiver so that I can complete the circle and participate in the flow of reciprocity. Freedom is not gained by retreating from the world, but by engaging the world and understanding it as the expression of our own consciousness and energy. I love what Rumi said. If you could get rid of yourself just once, the secret of secrets would open up to you. The face of the unknown, hidden beyond the universe, would appear on the mirror of your perception. So the next time you become disillusioned, upset, lacking in resilience, or finding fault with life, or even in a commitment of service, choose to be of generous spirit rather than of small mind. You know, it is our absolute nature to do so and to be so. We have this lying awaiting within our hearts every beat. Let it sound out. Let your generous nature be in sacred selfishness, freely, fully, and joyfully giving itself in sacred service. Trust me. It becomes you. Generosity has the ability to lift us up to a higher level where we are more human, more the person we really want to be. Each of us has this capacity within us, for we have life without end within us. All it takes is a willing spirit and the love's courage to be used for something greater than ourselves. Everything we were born to be, everything we have experienced in our lives, has been the perfect path for us to now make the choice to become a fuller expression of our compassionate, generous nature. Each of us, the face of God. And so it is. Amen.
Thank you for listening. If you have received a value, we invite you to share this podcast and check out our website, columbiacsl.com, to sign up for our weekly newsletter, providing thought-provoking blogs and details on our upcoming classes and community events. And we always are pleased to hear from you. You can reach us at podcast@columbiacsl.com. Thank you. Blessings on your journey.